I would like to, in the time that we have now, discuss what's crystallizing as a major cause of so many people drifting from Yiddishkeit. And I say crystallizing because there are many individual factors. This guy had this problem, this one had that problem, another problem, a trauma, a tragedy, a mental health problem, too much pressure, too much this, too much that, I mean, all kinds of things, you know. But lemaisa, there seems to be some broad strokes that are affecting a lot of people. And I thought that that would be a good way to start, you know, this series again this year. And what I hear from people is the following, and it's a very disturbing thing too, and it's something that we have to figure out a solution for, and I would really like to hear if anybody has any practical solutions. And that is, they say that I never made a decision to do or to live the lifestyle or the education, the system, the way that I'm doing. I sort of just fell into it. I think what they're saying, what that means is, Baruch Hashem, we have since, I mean, it's amazing that since the Holocaust, when there was so much devastation and all the Moistis HaTorah were destroyed, Kimat, and there was Kimat nothing going on here in the United States, and Kimat nothing going on in Eretz Yisrael, and the rest of the world was, most of what was going on in Europe was destroyed. And yet, here we are, you know, it's 70 years later, but it started 10 years later, 20 years later, the establishment. We are the establishment. The reform movement is nothing. There's nothing there. The conservative movement is falling apart. Modern Orthodoxy is on the verge of collapse because people find it very empty. And the yeshiva establishment, the Haredi establishment, the frum world seems to really be thriving. And that's a wonderful thing, except it takes with it, it brings with it a very serious problem. And that is that it's just assumed. Everybody goes that way. It's expected. That's what everybody's doing. That's just the thing that you do. Almost to the extent that nobody ever stops to think about it and to feel it. When you choose something, you choose it with conviction. And once you choose it, you develop even a greater conviction. And this is my choice. If somebody comes to ask you for a push at the Eitzah, someone comes to ask you for advice. If you give the advice, you have more likely than not hurt the person. Because you made it, advice is the wrong word, a decision. Because you made it your decision. The decisions that work the best are the decisions that the individual makes himself. I agonized, I thought about it, I analyzed the different possibilities, and I decided. It's my decision. If it's my decision, I have to live with it, number one. I have nobody to blame, number two. I'm more motivated to make it work, number three. I'm not even sure if there's a number four. But those factors mean that, you know, it's going to work. The chances of something working when it was my own decision are far greater than when anyone else. If someone else makes a decision, so first of all, I never bought into this. I never really wanted to do it. I asked somebody. They told me. I listened. I resent it. I don't like it. I'm not as motivated to make it work because if it fails, it's not my failure. It's your failure because you advised me to do it. And it just doesn't have that effort, that commitment, that passion, that excitement. And a little bit what I'm hearing is that people are feeling this way because it's like now. There aren't any simple solutions. Very simple solution, you hear? My kid is bar mitzvah. So I'll ask him, would you like to be religious or not religious? Would you like to be Orthodox or conservative or Reform? Would you like to be Jewish or Christian or Muslim or what else is there? Buddhist or what are we going to do? We don't have that many options to offer our children, because we know there's one way that's the right way. So there's very little choices. On the other hand, the Torah really did give a lot of choices. In fact, the Pirush HaMishnayos of the Rambam in the Mishnah there in the end of Makas Hashem Chofetz Laman Tzidkoi Rabbi Chanan Ibn Akashia. So he says that Laman Tzidkoi Shal Yisrael, the reason that is Yagdil Torah V'Yad, there's a lot of different mitzvahs, is it gave the opportunity to people to find their shleimus in different aspects of, in different types of mitzvahs. Really, theoretically, a person, if he did one mitzvah b'shleimus, that would be the fulfillment of the whole tachlis. Adam HaRishon and Chava had only one mitzvah to do b'shleimus. But one mitzvah b'shleimus is potentially enough, but practically not enough of an opportunity to each person according to his own personality, his weaknesses, his strength, his midas, his netiyas, his insights, his mind, his heart, his body, so many different things. So Memela, we have a lot of different opportunities. I like to point out the contrast between Reb Aryeh Levin and his son-in-law Rav Eliashiv. Reb Aryeh Levin was a major Talmud Chochem. It's not known because he was known as a tzaddik, but when there was a plague, some kind of a disease or something in Yerushalayim, he took over as the Rav. He paskened all the shaylas. He was the abbezdin, because the abbezdin had to leave town. He was sick, whatever. He had to go up north someplace, and he took over. And interesting footnote, you may have heard the story. They asked him. It was so out of character for him, because he was a big onov and he didn't do those things. So he said the reason he did it was because he was afraid if someone else did it, that when the abbezdin comes back, he'll never give him back his position. He knew he could trust himself that the minute the guy comes back, he'll be very happy to give it back to him. So whatever. So but he was a Talmud Chochem, yet his life was called Kuloi, a life of doing chesed. The chasodim that he accomplished in one day, most people didn't accomplish in a month, in a year, in a lifetime. It was day and night. It was not shaykh. He was known as the ultimate Baal Chesed. He had a son-in-law, Rav Eliashiv, who was also a Talmud Chochem, a big Talmud Chochem, one of the Gedolei Hador, and his whole life was learning. The Hasmoda of his learning was something that was legendary, and the little that he slept and day and night, and he knew everything and remembered everything. He continued to go again and again and again. And people, when he heard the psura that he became an ovil, so before anything happened, he wasn't allowed to continue learning. So he closed the Gemara that he was learning. And he opened the Gemara Moed Katan, and that's all that he's allowed to learn until the Levaya. It was not shaykh. And here you have two Torah dika people. Agav relatives, both Talmidei Chachomim, and yet each one found according to his nature, according to his personality, according to his. Vadasha was a very quiet, not very much, you know, wasn't like a big Mu'uriv Mabrius, although he had a very, very good sense of humor and, you know, really sharp sense of humor. But he was Nechba, like Kalim, you know, and Reb Aryeh was Me'urivim Kolabrias, and to talk to everybody and to help everyone. And to, in many ways, you know, Harbe Drochim Lamokim. So there are choices. You know, today, you can't make those choices at the yeshiva level, because if somebody who doesn't know how to learn wants to go out and just do chasodim, he's going to be deprived his whole life because he never became a Talmud Chochom. He never had the basics. He doesn't have a shlita on the Torah. But there is mokim for differences. Some people have natias in one, some have strength in one people, some have strength in another thing. There are people that speak, there are people that interact, there are people that are insightful with people, there are people that are more lebedic and they can excite people, there are other people who can more inspire, there are other people who could more have more patience to educate slow. Everybody has their, you know. So, but the point that's happening is that people are just feeling that I'm doing it because I have to do it because everybody else does it. Now that's besides the people that feel they were forced into it. One of my embarrassing moments was when standing in front of one of my children many years ago and bragging to someone that, as a parent, I was very liberal. I mean, considering, you know, not what maybe some of you people think of liberalism as, but I was pretty liberal. I let them, you know, whatever, not too bad, not so bad, don't worry. But, you know, pretty much I let them do things. And so this kid of mine was standing there, I think he was learning at Koilel at the time, and he says, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Even if you let us do something, we knew how passionately against it you were, we couldn't enjoy it anyway." So it's a rough business. It's definitely a rough business. But we have to find ways to make people realize that, you know, that it's their choice. Their choice, they want to do this, they're motivated to do this. And I think that, I don't know solutions to this. I'd be open to hear any solutions. Just keep quiet for a moment. But I think one solution definitely is that it's very critical for us to be able to communicate the reasons and the benefits, as Nechinuch Sloshen is, Tam v'Toy Elis, the reasons and the benefit for what we're expected to do. Because what that does is it mitigates the just doing it without thinking or doing it with force and gives it a sort of, hey, I may be end up doing this anyway because everybody's doing this. I may be doing this under pressure, but after everything is said and done, I want to do it because I know it's for my benefit. I understand why it should be done. I understand the happiness that it's going to bring me, and therefore that sort of makes it like yes, I may be still doing it because everybody else is doing it, but there's a piece of me that sort of, it's, you know, what everybody else is doing is really very good. Okay, so I'm going to do it too. There's some level of choice there, even though it's not a major choice. But now we have to be careful because, you know, it's like this in the Goyish Welt. You have all the choices. Nobody cares what you do. You know, as long as you don't get into jail, as long as they don't have your picture up in the post office, whatever you do, kid, it's good enough. You know, if you get your picture on a postal stamp, that's something else. That's good. You get the picture up in the post office. Other than that, you do what you want. Then you get the Jewish community. You know, Jewish people have different values, you know. They want certain things. You got to be a doctor, you know. A doctor is the best. Used to be. Today they're not making so much money. A lawyer, maybe something like this, you know. Get into whatever the professions are. There's a different value system. Then you get the religious people that you know that it has to be something that's compatible with my religious values. Then you get the more religious, the more orthodox people. Then you get the more people, this Haredi people. Then you get the yeshiva people. And each time you're narrowing down the choices. But in whatever world we are, and we're in a world which is even more narrow than the yeshiva world, but let's not go into that right now. But whatever the world is, we do have to make sure that there's a certain element of choice. For example, it's really a poor example, but I asked today with this group of teachers for an example. So I said, well, let's say you give a student an option. You could take an oral test or you could take a written test. Already the test is easier. I don't resent it as much. I can make a choice. I could do something. I feel a certain ownership. Choices make ownership. And ownership makes one feel good. So, you know, what other choices? Anybody have any good choices? Don't give me the bad ones. What's that? Huh?
Smart living.
What's that?
No, just a smart crack.
A smart crack?
Oh, that's
7:45.
Like
what's that?
Chakras. I don't know. Is that like a good example about?
It's not a good example. Thanks. What's that? Go ahead.
I'm saying that's in a classroom. Most people aren't going to be in a classroom.
Okay.
Sorry, most people will be in a classroom, but some people won't.
Okay, so therefore what? Well, that's a choice.
Yeah.
That's a choice right there.
Same, yeah, that's like a very particular, like...
So, really, give me some better ideas.
I don't know.
What?
Picking a teacher.
Who?
Picking a teacher.
Picking a teacher.
What's
that? It
means a rabbi.
I can't hear you.
It means a rabbi.
Okay, picking, that's... That could be. In other words, let's open up to the Hasidic world. What? Let's open up to the Hasidic world. They should choose which Rebbe they want. Doesn't sound so good, no? Is that what?
A Rebbe in yeshiva, having different options that a person could choose which one he gravitates to more.
We leave the yeshiva for a second.
Yeah, let's leave the yeshiva. Go home. Okay, I'm going.
Say you go home. You're with your kids. Then,
okay.
Then.
Well,
that's like the basic.
Okay. Very good. So, okay. So, first of all, there are many choices you can give your children.
Okay.
You know. One. The simplest one that all the psychologists talk about is from the earliest stage. Don't tell them. Don't pick their clothing for them. Don't tell them what to wear. Take out 3 sets of clothing and say, which one would you like to wear today?
Very good example.
Okay.
Now, could you enter the religion zone?
The religion zone at home?
Yeah.
That's why I was expecting you to do. What?
That's the tricky one.
You're giving choices. You have to make sure that both choices are good options.
100%. So that's Hillel's point. In the religious area, what choices do you have? What choice do you
have? It's not
where it was to learn first or play first.
Okay, that's good.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, you have to,
where it gets very gray and where it's really.
He just gave a very good example. He just okay. He just, but he just
has to be.
He just gave a very good example. Listen, he just gave a very good example. You have to learn. Listen, I insist that you listen. I insist. I want you to learn an hour on Shabbos. Yeah, okay. I want you to learn an hour on Shabbos, but. I said, would you like to play first or would you like to learn first? So that's a choice. That's a sense. There's a certain. I know. You want
them to do something and you're telling me it's a choice?
What? You do. Which one do you want? When do you want to do it?
You have to do both, but you can choose.
That's not that. I don't know.
It's the lesser of two evils.
So you give me a choice.
It's psychological.
Your point is that there are no religious choices.
The question is how many choices you could get
what?
In the
no,
habit.
I can't hear talk. What?
Be than
which yeshiva you could go to? Okay. What's that? You're right. Those are the two choices. You're right.
7:45.
That's not a choice. What?
They
need a base medrash. That'd be a good idea. All right, gentlemen. We think we solved this problem, but it's a point that's worthy of.
I don't think you touched it at all.
We touched the problem. We didn't touch the solution.
Technical issues. You didn't touch the problem. The problem is the religion.